It's time for Triangulation. A great guest this week, the JW in JW Player, the king of streaming video next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Triangulation, episode 367, recorded Friday, October 5th, 2018. Jeroen Weiring. Triangulation is brought to you by Toto Washlet. Upgrade the once mundane trip to the bathroom into a spa-like experience with Washlet. To learn more and for special savings, go to wayfair.com/triangulation. And don't forget to enter the promo code triangulation at checkout. And by LastPass, secure every password-protected entry point to your business. Join over 33,000 businesses and start managing and securing your company's passwords today. Learn more at lastpass.com/twit. Welcome to Triangulation, a special episode with a man who is really legendary in the business. Jeroen Weiring wrote JW Player, the video player. We use at Twitty. They're also a sponsor of our shows. Back when he was in school, and now it's kind of the dominant video player in the world. Certainly it's what is powering all the video on twit.tv. Jeroen Weiring, and I hope I'm saying it close to, not even close. Hello, Jeroen.
Hello, yeah, and thank you. And yeah, it's very, very good.
Are you in New York today, or are you in Eindhoven?
Today I'm in New York. Yeah, yeah, right. You can see that on the background. It's very sunny. And
yeah. Right, yep. Of course, you started in Eindhoven, a student there. And was this a hobby, the player, when you first wrote it? Tell me how a JW player came about.
Yeah, yeah. It was a bit of a side gig. I was doing design school, and I was building websites for customers on the site. And in both areas, I wanted to embed video. And back in the days, you had the tools like QuickTime and Real Player. You had to install them. They came with toolbars and banners. It was very complicated. And I decided to, let's build a very simple thing to put the video on the web page itself. And that turned out to be a very good idea.
Yeah, good thinking. What year was that?
It was probably in 03 or 04. Oh, so okay. Far away.
So yeah, long before YouTube came along or anything like that. Yeah, it was real. The world of Real Player, QuickTime, as you said. Yuck. You didn't have a whole lot of choices. Now, the Design Academy, was that, because that was, it's for art and architecture, right? Were they doing web design at that time? Is that why you went there?
Yeah, indeed. They had a back then not so massive, but currently very, very big media component.
Oh, yeah. Really? Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So audio, video, web. Yeah.
Were you interested in video, or was that just a side thing?
I liked it. Yeah. I was very interested in web and motion and video. I had another side gig before that as an operator in a movie cinema, really cutting the tape and putting that in a projector. That was also a very, very fun job.
Yeah. One of those big projectors, and they have the big spools of 35 millimeter film and all that.
Yeah, nowadays you press a button.
Yeah, now it's digital.
Back in the days, it was a lot of work to just get one movie going.
Oh, yeah. And then you had multiple projectors because a single reel wasn't the whole movie. Most movies were on multiple reels, right?
Yeah. You had to flip it about and, multiple cinemas, run around, make sure everybody got their movie starting at the right time. It was a very fun job.
Oh, I bet it was. And you get to see all the movies. Or you don't, because you only can see a little bit of it. Then you have to go to the next room, right?
Yeah, that's the problem is you always see the spoiler part 50 times. And then
never see the setup, just the end. So was that the days when at the leader of it, they would have that image of the woman sometimes at the beginning of the leader film of the film? Didn't they used to do that for color correction, I think?
Yeah. Luckily, we didn't have to do too much of that anymore. But just the whole analog part of it is a world apart from where we are now.
Really, really an amazing, amazing thing. And all within a short lifetime. You're a young guy. I mean, it really has changed dramatically. So you made it for clients. You put it on the website. How hard was that? What were the video formats back then? We didn't have MPEG-4 yet.
No. It was relatively. It was just about that time when the video went from really post-stamp format to the size of, hey, I can really see what's going on here, and I can see, get a little bit of detail.
Right.
Formats. The formats were definitely not what we're used to today, but it was just like VCR, I would say, the initial YouTube videos.
Yeah. So there was WMV, the Windows Movie Player, and then within that, the codecs were like Cinepak and stuff like just crappy codecs. QuickTime, which is .mov, but again, that's just a wrapper around. I don't know. Was Apple's using Cinepak too early on? I think, weren't they?
Yeah. Cinepak, Sorensen codecs, and then the Flash. Huh? They had the On2 codecs, the company that later got bought by Google.
Right. So that's a fascinating story. I mean, Flash at the time was welcomed because we had this mess of a scenario. Was JW Player at first written in Flash?
Yeah. Yeah, 100% Flash. Flash was really the technology kickstarted it all.
Yeah, that saved us because we didn't have to use a proprietary. You didn't have to use the QuickTime player or the real player. You could use a third party Flash player, and it would play almost anything you threw at it.
Yeah, and it would play in the page, and I think that was a big thing right there and then.
Right, it was an embed in the page. How hard was this for you? Had you coded before? Or?
I had done some coding, and then it was just a matter of just trying out things, learning more and more and more, reading blog posts. So the coding part was it was just an evolution, and not too hard, just adding things.
Wait, Flash had its own language. Did you write it in the Flash language?
Yeah.
Was that Lingo? What was it? I can't remember what it was called.
ActionScript.
Luckily,
it's very, it's kind of like a mashup between Java and JavaScript. So it was not, that was not too hard to follow.
Oh, that's good. So your clients say, oh, this is great. Thanks, Jeroen. Here's your 400 guilders. And then
15 at the time. Yeah.
It was nothing. So when did it start to take off? I mean, when did you know that, this might be more than just a web design job for me?
First you get 10 downloads, 100 downloads, 1,000 downloads. Then I thought, it's going to, I was very commercially oriented. So I had a great idea to charge €15 for it. And then you got these obscure companies, like a company called YouTube, used the player, paid €15.
This is before Google bought them. This is when Chen and company were just saying, this would be fun to have a video site. And so they came to you and they said, we want to use JW Player. Did you have any idea? Or YouTube at that time, nobody was just a thing. It wasn't a big thing.
No, they were just getting started.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had their friends uploaded some videos. They were just getting started. Yeah.
So wait a minute. They paid you €15. Did you ever get any more money out of them?
No. So
that's it?
Yeah, it turned out that my talents were more on the technical side than on the commercial side.
They bought it once, took the code, and ran. Mm-hmm. And when Google comes along and gives them $3.2 billion, not a penny goes to Jeroen Viren.
0.1%. that would have been nice. Yeah. I hear that a lot.
That's life, right? These things happen. What are you going to do, right?
Yeah.
Did Google continue to use JW Player, or did they immediately replace it?
They relatively rapidly did replace it, and they added a lot of bespoke functionality to the player. So I think they used it for a year, and then they started growing their own video player.
Now, I know there's open source code for JW Player. Was it open source to begin with, or?
Yeah, that was part of the plan. On the one hand, have the video player open source, so everybody can try it out. And then on the other hand, have that commercial license to it. Uh-huh. So if you're a company, you still pay for it. In essence, that model is still there. It's just not €15 anymore.
Right. So it's free for non-commercial use. Is that the?
Yeah, it's free for what we call developer use.
Right.
And then for companies, it's SaaS licenses.
Right. Right. We, of course, license it. I wouldn't dare use it for free.
No.
We've used a number of different players, but JW Player, and I think it's probably true even from the beginning, is notable because it's highly configurable. For instance, if you go to our site, one of the things I like about it is it's kind of white label. You look at the player, you see a player, but it doesn't have any branding. It doesn't say YouTube, for instance, on it. You only would know it's JW Player if you right-clicked on it. And then it said power. It does say powered by JW Player. If you zoom in, you might be able to see that 5.5, but or 8.5, I guess. But was that always the idea? Was it was going to be custom, highly customizable?
Yeah. Highly customizable, highly adaptable. So you don't have to write your own video player. And yeah, in a way, it's the anti YouTube. YouTube is. It comes with YouTube's skinning, branding, YouTube's advertising, your users belong to YouTube, your content belongs to YouTube. This is the complete opposite. It's the true, like, you know, Intel inside, in the back.
Right. It's actually, you can see the contrast on our own site because we do have live streams. And on the live streams, depending on who you're watching, you'll have the branding. In this case, it's the YouTube stream. We have also Mixer, but you'll see branding there. You'll see branding on Twitch, Ustream, Spreaker, TuneIn. Everybody puts branding on there. So that it's really nice for us on the downloads, on the after the fact, to be able to play it back in JW Player. We really like it.
And in addition to the branding, it's the, you know, as you saw, YouTube, the bar at the bottom leads you to videos. Yep. Yeah, well, and content from other companies, right. So they actually are not on your watching your content anymore.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. Yeah, and then there's some temptation to click that YouTube button and plus recommendations and blah 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 blah. I mean, I'm not knocking it because YouTube gives us free live streaming. They give people free video storage, so there really is a trade off. I mean, you really get some benefit from YouTube, but if you as we do, we use CashFly. If you have a CDN and you've got your own data serving, it's much better to do it in a player that you control for obvious reasons. So the idea of customizing was always there. The idea of a dashboard was always there. It must be tempting to throw a bunch of stuff in there. Are you still involved in the development of this, or have you passed it off now to other people?
I'm still involved with, highly involved on the product side.
That's nice.
Not writing a lot of code anymore. Unfortunately, it's fun.
Yeah, you like doing it? Yeah.
Yeah, I like doing it just to also see, still do it a little bit just to see what's going on, what are the new trends and technologies.
Right. So Flash, it doesn't take too long before this guy named Steve Jobs in 2007 says, well, you know what, we're not going to support Flash. And Apple, pretty soon, where Steve puts a big letter on the front page at Apple.com saying why Flash is the Antichrist. At what point did you say, we're going to have to try something else? How long did you stick with Flash?
We were very, very early on in flipping. We were already, HTML5 video was already around, so we were already testing with it. So I think what Apple has done with these announcements and then the iPad has really accelerated that shift.
Yeah.
So that, in a way, that was really good. We had not expected that, so we had to scramble, build out our video player. But after that, we really quickly made sure that we were the first one to cover it on iOS devices, and then also the first one to be able to as much as possible replace Flash for other browsers as well.
We're talking to Jeroen Viering. Who is the creator of JW. He's the JW and JW Player, and an expert in video. And actually, one of the reasons I really wanted to have you on is to talk about this whole mishmash of problems and codecs and HTML5 and HLS, which is Apple's streaming. There, you have your own, not your own, but there's another standard, the HTML5 streaming, which I would prefer to see. And I don't think I really even understand, even though I stream video for a living, I really don't understand the complexities involved. So I want to kind of get into that and what HTML5 video really means, because it's a lot more complicated than that name would imply. So hang tight. Jerome Viring is our guest. But before we go on, I want to talk about our sponsor. We have two sponsors on the show today. Both of them I use every day. One of them, I don't know how to describe this delicately, is my toilet. We discover, if you've been to Japan, you've seen the Japanese toilets. I mean, they're a miracle. And at first, it seems kind of Japanese and gimmicky until you use it. And then you go, oh, well, that's pretty nice. We actually got a Toto washlet in our house, oh, I don't know, pretty much 5 years ago. We bought the house 5 years ago, and I think within 6 months, it was Alex Lindsay, I think, who told me about the Toto washlet. And I like everybody, like maybe even you said, oh, yeah, come on, I don't need that. And he said, no, you do. And when you try it, you will never go back. We eventually converted every toilet in our house. And now when I travel, I miss my Toto washlet. Toto washlets. And you can, by the way, there are a variety of levels. For want of a better phrase, an electronic bidet toilet seat. It is designed to give you a higher level of cleanliness and comfort. The seats have a variety of features ranging from one you just install instead of your existing toilet seat to an entire toilet. They have features like the auto open and close lid and seat. Imagine walking into your bathroom and the toilet seat goes, lifts up to greet you, and then closes when you're done. Completely hands-free. I don't have to imagine it because that's exactly what happens. And a hands-free is kind of important. I think this is why the Japanese invented this, for hygiene's sake. At no point are your hands are touching anything. You don't need toilet paper anymore. By the way, we have a septic tank, and not using toilet paper has really made a big difference in our septic system. It also saves money and saves trees. And you'll like it better. You're clean. See, there's the wand that provides... by the way, the water is heated. I love it. It's actually... the seat is heated on ours. You can get heated seats. Feels like you... I don't know. You sit down on it and you just go, ah, I'm not moving. Ah, I really like this. And if it's, it's summer and it's hot and you don't want it, you can turn that off. Everything is controlled, completely controlled by a menu. We have a remote control that has it all on there. Actually, we don't even really use the remote. We just attach it to the wall so that it's easy to reach. But you could if you wanted. I don't know why, but you could carry it around if you. And when you're all washed up, and these are all features, optional features. You choose which ones you want. The dryer blows warm, dry air to dry you off. It is. I know this sounds crazy, but you try it and you will never go back. And it will it'll change your whole attitude. Never be embarrassed again. There's an automatic deodorizer that will circulate the air through a filter. Lots of other features. A pre-mist spray to spritz your toilet bowl before you use it. Afterwards, some models have e-water and electrolyzed water, so that helps kill germs. I mean, it is really state-of-the-art. You'll reduce toilet paper. You'll help the environment. Many washlets feature additional things, advancements like a nightlight, remote controls, on-demand water heating. That means you'll never run out of warm water. Actually, I have to admit, sometimes it's so much fun, you might want to stay in there a little extra time. That's why it's nice to have the on-demand heating. It will impress your friends. We put one in the guest bathroom. People actually come to our house now just to use our Toto. We love our Toto washlet. You will too. I know. I have to convince you. Alex Lindsay had to convince me, but once he did, once you try it, you will never again go back. If you've ever been to Japan, actually, I'm starting to see more and more of them now in restrooms around the nation. Here in the U.S., I think it's great. Wayfair.com/triangulation. Wayfair.com/triangulation. And you can use our promo code triangulation at checkout for additional savings. We know you're going to love the future of toilets. It'll change the way you experience clean. And don't forget, wayfair.com/triangulation and the promo code triangulation at checkout. With several models to choose from, Toto makes it easy and affordable to find the perfect one for you. I know you're going to laugh and giggle and smirk, but then try it. And it'll change your tune. Toto Washlet. Check it out. Wayfair.com/triangulation. To be really honest, we are so hooked on this thing, we've been trying to get them to advertise on the show for 5 years. because we love it so much. And I'm thrilled that we finally got him on the this is the first ad I've done. We've got him on Triangulation. Toto's Washlet at wayfair.com/triangulation. Don't forget the offer code Triangulation. Jeroen Vering, I'm mangling his name, but he's used to it. They call him Jeroen in the office. You are the creator. He is the creator. He knows this, but I'm telling you, of JW Player. I like it sometimes in interviews to say, you are the creator of JW Player. You went to Eindhoven at Design Academy. Like you didn't know that. I'm really glad to talk to you because I'm an admirer from afar from a long time. He really did change the face of video for a lot of us, for streaming video. Since my business is streaming video, this was very important to us. And it really, getting away from Flash was a big deal for all of us. You surprised me when you say that HTML5 video had been around. That felt like something Google pushed on us fairly recently. Not the case.
Indeed. Yeah, it'd been around for a while. It was actually the team from Opera that the first implemented video. I think we're talking about 06 or 07. So before the iPad, yeah.
But
it needed a nudge, and it definitely got that nudge when the iPad
got launched. Steve Jobs. Yeah. So is it a W3C standard?
Yeah. Right now it's W3C standard. I think it's just about the only way that you can stream video these days. And at least all the major browsers have standardized on it. And it's not done yet, so there's still bits and pieces that the W3C and companies like us are still figuring out.
All right, you're going to help me because it is a mishmash of concepts and terms. There's codecs, there's wrappers, there's the video tag, which doesn't say anything at all. It is a crazy quilt of concepts, and people say it HTML5 as if that's like, well, you know, but that's a magic wand, but it doesn't even really say what codec, right?
Yeah, indeed, there's a lot going on. Yeah, so, I can.
Help me. help me and our audience understand.
I think that the video tag, that single HTML5 tag, it's very simple. It's very deceptively simple. Underneath that goes the video file, so the file that you're loading. Nowadays, luckily, there is one format that works everywhere, the MP4 format. With the H.264 video and the AAC audio, and that allows you to play a clip, not a live stream or a long form piece of content, but a clip of video across all the browsers.
So those are codecs, compression decompression algorithms. Obviously, you can't play uncompressed video. You can't stream uncompressed video. It's too massive, so you have to squeeze it. It's a lossy, almost always lossy. It is always lossy. Same thing with the audio. It has to be compressed. So you're saying that the HTML5 standard now is MPEG-4, H.264. Is that the same thing?
Yeah, so the container, the file format, the zip file, call it, is MP4.
Okay.
And then the video is today is mostly H.264.
But you could have an MPEG-4 that contains a different codec.
Oh yeah, that's all possible. Yeah,
like a WMV or a MOV could contain different codecs. So yep. MP4 is the new MOV, basically.
Mm-hmm.
That was the old QuickTime wrapper. I call it a wrapper because it's what contains the data, but the data can be compressed in a variety of ways. Isn't there VP6, VP9? There's other codecs as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's been through the years there's been a ton of different codecs. What you're now seeing is that H.264, that's the standard one. And then you have two or three even next generation codecs. So you have two advanced ones coming up. One of them is from Google. It's open source. It's free. It's called VP9. The other one is from the MPEG consortium, and that's H.265. So that's essentially the successor to the one that's currently very widely used. And the perk of both is essentially that they make the video smaller at the same file size.
The part of the reason people kind of didn't want to use H.264 is this notion that it was encumbered by patents, and that in some cases, and it's never been clear which cases, you'd have to pay royalties to the MPEG Alliance. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's still, the terms have been clarified and a lot. And I think that this is also something that the Google's codecs have helped nudge in the right direction. But yeah, it's still a little bit messy. And a new codec has at least three different patent pools with their own rights and loyalty. So that's essentially what is hindering the adoption of this the new version, the 2.6.5 version.
Right. And Google claimed at the time, no patents on VP9, but that may not actually be the case, right? It's kind of hard to do video compression without being at least vulnerable to a patent lawsuit.
Yeah, I think that it's hard. But the chances of any company really digging in and trying to get Google to pay up for something is relatively low. Google also made a sort of handshake settlement with the consortium that controls H.264. My lights are turning off. One second.
Wave your hands.
Yeah, I'll wave my hands.
Modern corporations will save money any way they can, boys and
girls. Yeah, it looks like it. Let me quickly. There we go. I just had to run around.
That means we've kept you too long. Lights are out.
I think the big thing that has the patents are the problem of the
right.
standard codec. They're
right.
very, very good codecs, but the patents are just what holding a bunch of companies and of course also individual developers back from innovating.
Well, it's also unclear who, if MPEG LA comes after you, who has to pay and who doesn't have to pay. It's very unclear.
Yeah,
I know you as the player creators would absolutely have to pay a license fee. There's no question about that. But do the users have to pay a license fee? That seems unclear.
Yeah, and it's use case based. It's destination based. It's relatively complicated, indeed.
But you do support. I should say that JW Player supports all of these. In fact, JW Player really will support anything you throw at it, pretty much, right?
Pretty much. We are restricted in what the browsers can play. But within that scope, yeah, there's a lot of things we can do.
Is JW Player always embedded in a browser? Is that the only way to use it?
No, it used to be the only way. And then, of course, mobile apps and later on OTT devices came up. So now it's half of it is browsers, half of it is apps.
In fact, I'm sure you have a lot of data on this. I bet you mobile is suddenly becoming the big way people are using your player, right?
Yeah. Mobile has turned out to be the biggest contributor now to usage.
Yep.
And now, slowly but surely, you see the TV device is also ramping up.
Oh, interesting. So I don't know if you can talk about this, but what TV devices use JW Player?
So the ones that we can support are the ones that have the open ecosystems where you can push apps into Roku, Fire, Apple TV, and then Android TV or Chromecast. Those are the big ones.
And that would be up to the channel to decide what player to use?
Yep.
So that's interesting. So these internet enabled TV devices really are just they're just players. They're just is it like web technology? Is it HTML and CSS and all that, JavaScript?
Oh, would that be nice if that was the case?
Oh.
But no. Of course, every platform has. Well, it's not. That's what one of the things that we're pushing. And that's one of the things that we're also hoping to have the W3C or other organizations lead standardize this. As the Apple TV uses Apple's Swift language.
Yeah.
Android, Java, Roku has its own language. Because
really? Because
There weren't enough. Yeah,
there weren't enough. Yeah. Wow. Okay. How interesting. But you could use JW Player in all these environments. That's also interesting.
Yeah, yeah. As well as you know, what like the there are some TVs, of course, that also on the TV itself have
players too. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, like the Samsung, the LG WebOS platforms.
You're really well positioned. I don't know if you knew this as a struggling student in the early 2000s, 2003, but why write a player? This was certainly our question. If you're NBC and CBS, you're probably saying the same thing. Why write a player when a very good one exists? You can white label. It's standard. You guys are constantly doing the work to support new codecs. It seems like a no-brainer that people just use JW Player.
Yeah, and I think that's the wave that we've been able to ride. On the one hand, there's more and more of these devices coming out, so bigger and bigger organizations are making the decisions to not build this themselves and buy a white label. And then on the other hand, you see that all these use cases around live streaming, around advertising, they're getting standardized. And that really helps us build a standard product for everybody.
Good.
So we're not, the way that CBS put their ads into their video is not completely different from the way that like a Fox puts their ads in videos.
Ah, excellent.
So that's why we're pushing so hard on these standards and advertising sites, HTML5 site. It's good for us.
Good. Yes. So let's get back to that. So H.265 versus VP9. I know there's a technical difference in how they do what they do, but is there a difference in how the result, the out? I mean, do you have a preference of one over the other?
I think on the result side, you can split hairs and say that H.265 is a little bit better. But I think that the big difference is the adoption. Some browsers, the Chrome and the Firefox browsers, and nowadays Edge, they play VP9. Of course, Apple's ecosystem plays H.265, so in the end, you need both.
You have to have both.
That's the conundrum we're in today with these next-generation codecs, which, if you're Netflix and you have a lot of power to spend on encoding or YouTube, then you do both. But if you're if you're a twit, then it doesn't make sense.
No,
you just
let
stick
you
with
do,
the old
we'll
format
let you do the
and
work.
Wait.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let us do the work.
Let you do the work. It's well worth. I don't know what we pay for a license fee, but it's whatever it is. It's totally.
No, sounds like we're still too low.
No, you're just right. Whoops. Does Netflix use JW Player?
Nah, I think Netflix is too bespoke. So that's that. We're a product. We're not a development shop.
Yeah,
and
that's
right. Like super, super, super top tier. That's the part that
they
we're
can
not
develop.
Gonna...
They it's worth it for them to develop their own thing. One of the things though that you do really nicely is adaptive streaming. This is part of there's so many issues that a player has to deal with that are different from 2003, not only screen size, but also network quality, bandwidth, not just bandwidth variation, but latency and all sorts of things. Do you spend most of the engineering time trying to handle these, edge cases?
That's a big chunk of the engineering time. Yeah, yeah. The quality of the streaming service, and of course the advertising, which nowadays also tends to be a delay and factoring delays in showing the content.
Right. Well, let's talk about that because around about 2007, an American advertising company, Longtail Media, came to you and said, "We should work together." What was your initial reaction? You can be honest with me. They're not listening.
Yeah. But by that time I graduated and I was looking for people to start a company with, people with some business sense. YouTube was big by then. I wanted to find partners in the United States and had talked to a couple of people. Some of them didn't like my project. Some of them, different visions. And Brian and Dave, my two co-founders, they came to me with their with their idea of an ad server. They just started it and asked me to join. And that nice. Really, the visions really aligned there.
And of course, the company ended up being JW Player instead of Longtail Media. So I think that's good for you. This is interesting then. So the next step for you, you saw, was the ability to, you mentioned insert ads over banner ads. What are you talking about here?
Yeah, back in the days, so we're talking 07, 06, 07, 08, there was very little video advertising inventory. So what we did was essentially put a banner ad over a video player and then count it down to 10 seconds as if it were a pre-roll video.
Right.
And that was the model back then. And then later on, as the inventories changed, of course, we switched to actual video advertising.
Right. And can you now insert interstitial ads, that kind of thing, into the stream as well?
Yeah, what you're now seeing is, of course, for shorter form content, the pre-roll ad is still the dominant format. Either you get skip buttons or the durations go towards 12 seconds or 6 seconds,
right.
and then for longer form content. All the broadcasters that put their content online, you see that there's a pent up interest in advertising. There, it's a replica. It's mostly a replication of the old model or the Hulu model. You get a pod of three or four ads,
right,
somewhere in the middle.
But they want to be able to change those. They don't want to bake it into the video. They want to be able to change them. So your player has to be smart enough to say, oh, here's a marker. Go get some content. That content's going to be changing, so you're going to have a redirect, pull it in, play it, then go back to the original content, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, indeed. And even say to the ad server, like, hey, by the way, this is season three of this episode of this show, and it's about these topics. So the content, the advertising can also be tailored to fit that.
Oh, that's interesting. So why put a skip button in? I've always wondered. I mean, as a user, you love it, right? I don't want to watch this. Why do you put, but don't advertisers say, hey, wait a minute, they're skipping my ad?
Some advertisers are saying that, and we're not selling the advertisement, so we're not
the ad server. It's not your issue. Yeah.
Yeah, well, no. Actually, it is our issue. The more ads, the more publishers make a lot of money with ads, the more customers we have.
Okay,
So we definitely see it as our issue.
Yeah.
But what we are hearing advertisers saying is that this is great because I am paying or I'm seeing which of those 1,000 people that started to watch my ad actually was interested in it. So instead of sending an email to 1,000 people, 950 of which have no interest whatsoever in my product, I can send an email to 50 people that have watched these ads to completion. In fact, one of the things that makes fraud detection that's used in fraud detection is whether these skip rates are very low. So meaning like only few people skip the ad. That's very suspect.
That means nobody's seeing it.
that means probably it's like robots watching
it's
the
robots
ads.
Watching. Robots never skip.
They don't skip.
That's really interesting. So actually, it's a signal to the advertisers that this is somebody who wants to know more. This is somebody who likes the ad. Now, you said something interesting, though. Then now, how does the advertiser have the email address?
Well, the email address they probably don't have, but they do have the sometimes they have their own information already on a person. Of course, something like the retargeting. You already went to the website. They show an ad on another domain, but then in the back end, they know through a cookie that user has already been on their site, so they can flag that user as saying, like, hey, they also watched the ad through to completion.
So this is an interesting situation now, because I think for geeks, you're a hero because you made a player that works. It's easy. A lot of sites use it. But you're now doing an ad server. Now you're part of the enemy, the ad tech community. How do you balance that?
Yeah, that is. I think the big problem what we see is slow loading ads, too many ads, too long ads, and it's what we're trying to do is help our customers not reduce the ads, but just have better ad experiences.
Yeah.
Make sure that they set them up correctly internally.
Right.
Make sure that they get some data to back up fights they might have with the agencies behind them, as in like, hey, this ad that you guys are showing it's either way too long, so everybody's dropping, or it's way too slow to load, so we can't deliver our video content. Those kind of things are it's really that middle, the middle pack of that advertising ecosystem that we're trying to whip into shape.
Right. Yeah, I think that would go a long way. I mean, I think most reasonable people understand that if they're watching free content, there has to be ads, that's how it's paid for. And I think that if ads are not intrusive, if ads don't get in the way of the experience, if they're entertaining, there's lots of ways to make ads work, especially in video. People will tolerate it. But what they're worried about is malware. They're worried about, they're annoyed by ads that go on too long or are not interesting to them. And a lot of people have turned to ad blockers. Has that impacted your business as well?
It has not impacted our business, but there's definitely a lot of our customers that are thinking about it hard.
But ad blockers don't work in JW Player?
Ad blockers typically also block video advertising.
Right.
So they definitely work.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But you just don't see it being a problem.
I do see it being a problem for our customers.
Yeah.
It has not impacted ours. It's a level playing field across us, and
blocks everybody else, right?
If you build your own video player, the ad is still getting blocked.
Yeah. So, yeah. Is there pressure on you to develop anti-ad blocker tools?
Yes. Yeah, there is. And, there are some companies that we work with. But in the end, that is, of course, a bit of a cat and mouse game and a difficult positioning.
Yeah.
What you're seeing is that, advertisers, on the one hand, you see more sanity in terms of less intrusive ads,
right.
Shorter ads,
right.
Slow but steady improvements on loading of advertising. Hey, you don't look at a 5-second spinner. The ad comes in.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, I think there's also companies that or a lot of publishers that now say, hey, you don't have an ad. Let me guide you, or let me show you a banner or a notification saying, hey, you can either watch the ad or you give me a subscription or some other form of compensation.
I bet you have so much data on how people watch video, how people skip, how many people skip, how fast they skip, how long it takes for a video to load before people just go throw up their hands and say, screw it. And I want to know more. We're going to take a little break. We'll come back and find out more. We're talking to the author, JW Player, really probably the single person that knows more about streaming video than anybody, Jerome Vijering. Oh, man, it's getting worse as the show goes on. I have to say, I apologize. I'm going to call you Jerome.
Perfect.
We'll have more with Jerome and JW Player in just a second. But first, a word from LastPass. I hope you're using LastPass. Goodness gracious. If you're not, I don't know why not. LastPass is the best password manager in the business. I use it because I use a lot of different systems and a lot of different operating systems. And only LastPass works every single place I want to be, not just on my desktop. In every browser I use, on every mobile device I use, it works on Linux, which is really important to me. I love LastPass. You're going to love LastPass if you're a business, too, because in business, passwords are a nightmare anyway. We've got to fix this. But as long as passwords exist, we're going to need LastPass. It makes it easy for you to create and remember strong passwords. And that's double for your employees. You're giving your employees the keys to the kingdom. They need passwords to your servers, to your customers, to your bookkeeping, your accounting. And those people have the keys to the kingdom. How do you do it? and still protect yourself, LastPass Enterprise. That's what we use here at Twit, and we did it because we found a problem when one of our engineers was posting his passwords. He couldn't remember his passwords, so posted them on a website, which was a public website, which we realized was probably not the best thing. That's when I said, all right, we're moving to LastPass Enterprise. It's actually great for business. It makes it easy for employees to share passwords, to use passwords, to make passwords, but it also keeps access to corporate data secure. And you have, there's over 100 policies you can use, like master password requirements. You can enable password resets. You can restrict access when an employee leaves. You can restrict their access. You can even set it so that the employee has the password but doesn't know the password. You know, it just autofills, but they never see it. 81% of employees admit to sharing passwords at work. That's the problem, right? By the way, not just passwords. We use it for database logins. I use it for all my SSH keys. I trust LastPass so much, I put my passport in there, my driver's license. It's really handy to have a fully secure vault that you can put important information in and always have access to it. When I travel, I keep a copy of my passport. I don't keep it in my suitcase, as some people recommend. I keep it in my LastPass. So it's on my phone. I could pull it up anytime I need it. That's really handy. And with multi-factor authentication, and by the way, we require that. That's one of the policies we use at Twit. All employees have to use multi-factor authentication. LastPass is doubly secure. Even if the password gets compromised, bad guys still can't get this site. The LastPass Authenticator app is also awesome. It is one of those authenticators that pops up a button on the employee's phone. Are you logging in here? And that makes it, they don't have to enter a code or anything. They just press yes, and they're in. And that is really nice. If you use Active Directory, oh, you will love this. LastPass works with Microsoft's Active Directory credentials. So once employees log into that, they're logged into LastPass. I use LastPass at home, and a nice thing about LastPass Enterprise, it allows you to have your home LastPass and your enterprise at LastPass at the same time with a single login. So, and passwords are saved to the right place. They're not automatically copied from one place to the other. So it really is convenient. I just love LastPass. The password generator makes it easy to generate long, strong, random passwords. You don't have to remember them, so why not make it a good password? And it keeps employees from reusing passwords on different sites, which is really important. You should know data is encrypted and decrypted at device level. With strong encryption, data stored in the vault is kept secret even from LastPass. In fact, Steve went through all the LastPass source code. We interviewed Joe Segrist, and he got all the information, and now he uses it, so that's pretty good. From easy onboarding to password autofill, LastPass makes it easy for businesses to take control of passwords, reduce the threat of breach. You'll love LastPass, by the way, if you've upgraded to iOS 12. Yay, Apple's finally allowed us to have autofill in all of our fields. LastPass takes advantage of that immediately. That's wonderful. Android Oreo also adds this. So now it's even easier to use LastPass on mobile devices. It's literally the first program I install when I'm setting up a new phone because it makes it so much easier for me to install the rest of the programs. It is fabulous. No more copying, pasting from the LastPass app. It just autofills. LastPass has a variety of plans depending on your needs. LastPass Premium for personal use. LastPass Families for entire families. By the way, that's great because you can share passwords with your significant other easily and securely. Just kind of like in the business version. LastPass Teams for teams of 50 or fewer. And then, of course, what we use, LastPass Enterprise. More than 13 million people trust LastPass. 33,000 businesses. It is the number one most preferred password manager. It's the one I recommend. It's the one I've used for almost a decade now. Actually, I think it is a decade. LastPass.com/twit. It's actually fun. I have to go through my LastPass vault because I've got passwords to things like GeoCities accounts I should probably prune. I've been using it for so long. LastPass.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of triangulation. Jerome is our guest. I'm going to call him from now on. He's the creator of JW Player. Jerome Vijering. He is the Dutch fellow who wrote JW Player when he was in school. Now works as chief product officer for JW Player, the company, and Empower. How many do you give out? How many sites? How many installations of JW Player are there out there? Do you know?
I think what we're seeing month to month, it's you know, between 500,000, 750,000 now.
Wow, that's amazing. Do you know how much video a month does JW Player stream? Do you have that metric?
Somewhere in the 10-15 billion video streams per month. So I don't know how many minutes that is, but it's probably not
and many petabytes of data. Wow. That is truly amazing. What do your metrics tell you about how important it is that video play right away and it not buffer too much? You must see rates of, you know, skipping and getting out of there, quitting the player.
Yeah, critical. Yeah. What you're seeing is that on the one hand, the attention span or the interest in waiting for video, because video is getting better, so of course people expect it to load faster. That's going down.
So we used to be willing to wait 10 seconds or 20 seconds for video to start.
Not anymore.
Yeah. What is that? What do you tell your customers? Look, your video better load within.
What we're always saying is like within 2 seconds, really under a second.
Yeah. People are that impatient.
Yeah. Holy get it done. Cow. Yeah. And then, then the clock starts ticking. And then you'll take 10% every second. By the time you're at 7 or 8 seconds, half your audience is gone.
Oh, my God. That really is serious. You better load fast. How do you load fast? I mean, those are massive files. What is the slowdown? Is it finding the file? Is it?
It's making the trip to the server, and then you're getting the file in.
Is that a DNS issue?
What you're seeing is that content delivery networks, CDNs, they help a lot. If you have your video on your server in the U.S., you're watching from Europe, that delay alone is already reason
for
somebody
to
skip their video.
Yep.
Like CacheFly.
Want servers all over the world, because then if you're watching in the Netherlands, you're going to get a Dutch server, and that's what you want.
Yep. So I think that's a big one. Of course, these networks are also good at having the large enough pipes to get you the video very fast.
Yeah, very
that's
important.
That's important. Yeah, and then the third thing is this is one of the not more recent developments in video in the past couple of years, is that instead of sending a video down the pipe, you're getting small, snippets of a video. You're getting 5 seconds, 2 seconds of a video. And then what the player does is it grabs the 2 seconds. Then it knows, like, my bandwidth is this and this fourth. So I'm grabbing the next 2 seconds at this quality level. And then, it constantly evaluates what's going on.
We've all seen that, where a video will start maybe a little chunky and then it'll get very crisp and sometimes go in the other direction. What is the technology? I know Apple has its own HTTP streaming, HLS. And I know this because Apple says, you can't watch our streams unless you're using Safari. You guys support, do you support HLS? Or can you even support HLS?
I don't know when it was, in like 2009, 2010, did a painful deconstruction of that protocol.
Oh, no
and
kidding.
And supported on other browsers, yeah.
So you did that by reverse engineering HLS?
Yep, wow. Yeah, more or less, yeah.
Wow. And then what is the other technology that you use that's more standard?
The standard version is called Dash.
Dash.
Okay. Yeah, Dash. It's essentially the same, just little snippets and tidbits that are different. And in Dash, you can also put, for example, the Google codecs. Because in HLS, you can only use the 264, 265 codecs.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. So if you wanted to use VP9, you'd have to use Dash.
Yeah, or a DRM to protect. If you're a movie studio, you want to protect your content, you got to use Dash 2.
Oh, that's another issue.
Oh yeah. It's a laundry list. Yeah, that's why we're in business. Yeah.
So copy protection. Do you have to have keys? Are you involved? Do you get? I guess you'd have to if you wanted to play content that was copy protected.
Yeah. We typically work with companies that do that, that do the key management and the login and those kind of things. And then we get the keys, or the player gets the key to deconstruct the video, or to unscramble the video.
All right, I know everybody watching this knows what buffering is, but what is buffering and why does it happen?
Yeah, you're just waiting for the next chunk of video to arrive, and that's sometimes slow. The server may be far away. The bandwidth may be lower than the bandwidth the video needs, and those things are all like contributing to buffering. So that nice little black screen with a spinner in the middle that I would say we were very used to 5 to 10 years ago,
yeah.
And look, it's getting so much better in the past couple of years.
Our tolerance of buffering then, that means, has gone way, way down.
Tolerance is down, yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean that there's something wrong with your bandwidth at home. It could very easily be the company that's providing the content.
Yeah. It can be anywhere in the middle. And that's also one of the tricks nowadays with mobile devices, because if you're thinking about a computer that's on a network, a Wi-Fi network, you might have a pretty good connection. But on mobile, not only is your connection, especially the latency, the time it takes for a byte to arrive, is relatively long, but you're also hopping between cell tower and cell tower. So those qualities are also going up and down. You might be in a room, have spotty connection. You're in the tunnel, right? So all these kind of things make the continuation of a video stream for mobile devices really tough.
Yeah, that is a huge issue. Actually, even Wi-Fi will because of the nature of the Wi-Fi architecture, stop for a while and then start again. We see that sometimes with streaming video. We always tell our callers on Skype to use a wired connection, because Wi-Fi can also just stop briefly and then come back. So you have to be robust about all this stuff. You have to handle it well. It's kind of unimaginable. And it's the other problem is it's changing all the time. Is there any special accommodations for streaming video on 5G? Will 5G change things at all?
Presumably, have improvements in the throughput, improvements in the latency. So there's like with your own with home connections, there's a lot of the improvements happening. Of course, whether they contribute to the faster loading of content, or whether that would mean that we want higher resolution videos, that's the bigger factor.
Yeah. Where are we now on that? Is more of your we're not going to go to 4K streaming, or are? Oh, I guess we already are.
Yeah, we already are. Yeah. We have a decent number of customers that do 4K streaming.
No kidding.
Yeah, I don't know if 8K is going to be that important. It's really hard to find pixels with 4K.
Yeah.
It's one of the if you look at YouTube, they have a list of devices that they say are YouTube approved, and one of the notions there is that it has to be 4K.
Wow. So, but you support it too. JW Player supports it. Was that a challenge? I mean, you have to get the pipeline pretty responsive to handle that much bandwidth.
Yeah. The bigger challenge is on the encoding, because the files are so long, or so big,
right,
that you'll get issues with getting the file sizes, especially their original file sizes up on the servers, and then getting the encoding processes fast enough to encode the video.
Well, Jaron, I'm really grateful to you for the work you did to create JW Player in the first place, and for the work we don't have to do because we use JW Player on our site. It is a really it's a super product, and you can see why we use it, because this is constantly changing. There's new stuff to figure out all the time, and we don't even have to think about it thanks to JW Player. I appreciate the work you're doing. You still enjoy it? Is it still fun for you?
Yeah, it's moving so fast. Both the company is growing and the landscape is moving. That makes it very, very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, your job isn't over.
not done yet. Yeah.
By a long
6G,
shot.
7G, yeah.
yeah, absolutely. And then, who knows? I mean, new formats of new compression formats, new things. I think a lot of what you're doing is customers are saying, well, we would like to be able to do this or that, new demands from customers. It's a never ending journey.
Never dull.
Yeah. Jeroen, all right, one more time, I'll try to do it right. Jeroen Viering. Not even close.
No, that's very good. That was actually a very good one.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us. We appreciate talking to you. And as I said, we appreciate JW Player very much. Thanks for your time.
Great for being here. Thank you.
We do triangulation. Normally, I'm doing a little early in the morning today because we had to fit Jeroen's schedule. But normally, we do it about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 UTC on Friday afternoons. It's not just me. It's also Megan Maroney, Jason Howell, and we kind of rotate it. And that's nice because we all have different interests. And we'll have meetings. We'll say, I want that guy. No, that's mine. She's going to be my guest. And that's fun. And that way we get somebody doing the interview who really is interested in the subject. And we find a very broad range of topics. But it's always the most interesting people in tech. So however you watch, and I know some of you are listening right now in airplanes. Some of you are at home watching the live stream. We are very grateful that you watch. If you watch the live stream, it's at twit.tv/live. And if you do that, please participate in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. But you can always get this on demand. Download copies of audio or video of this show at our website, twit.tv/TRI. You can watch right there on the site in JW Player. Enjoy. Thanks to Jeroen. And you can also use your favorite podcast application to subscribe. And that way, whenever there's a new show, at whatever time we record it, you'll get it automatically and can listen at your convenience. twit.tv/TRI. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time on Triangulation. Bye-bye.